disaster. Don't you give up, don't you let away. Talking about a forever after. Don't you give up, don't you dare give up.
Greetings, friends, clients, the public, adversaries, anyone who's listening to us this Monday evening, 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Jack Tuckner joining you, pleased to be here with Deborah Orell on the Women's Rights in the Workplace show. How are you, Deborah Orell?
Terrific, and glad you're here.
Thank you, yes. Well, you know, I apologize to our listeners. Last week I did have an unexpected absence. I injured myself in a sporting event, I guess in my middle age. Powerlifting perhaps is contraindicated medically, so I tore a bicep tendon. Any physicians out there listening to us today, I'd be happy to have you call in and give us your number and give us your opinion. Anyone who has will give us more than 3 minutes of advice, and all of it won't be covered by insurance. We understand that, but I'm just, you know, some physician that is willing to explain himself, that I haven't found so far in my diagnostic prognostic search. But we'll work through the pain, and still pleasure to be here. And today, I understand, sorry, we didn't have our guest, Dov Kesselman, last week, who is a prominent lawyer, one of our adversaries, a defense lawyer, was going to explain what it's like from the other side. Sometimes it's just important to get the other view of what it's like to a person who's an attorney, an officer of the court, who represents defendants, people who are accused of sexual harassment. Because, you know, in our firm, we don't do that. And sometimes hard for us to understand what it's like. Mm-hmm. But he'll be back with us in a week or so. We just need to
firm that
up.
But you did work for legal aid.
I worked for legal aid. Well, but
so
that
you
was
did defend.
That, well, that was criminal. Okay, that's true. I did defend, but you know,
people,
I guess
people that, you know, others found.
How
can you defend him?
That's true. That is true. So it's not that I don't understand how they do that, but I suppose I always felt, you know, with legal aid, it also came down to when you're a public defender,
yes,
right? It not only, of course, were the consequences.
Well, they were being railroaded, and
well, even when they're not railroaded, even when they were guilty, so to speak, actually guilty or apparently guilty, the idea that they were facing a lot more
time.
Well, they were facing a lot more punishment, excuse me, than perhaps our clients do when they're facing, and this
right,
might be sort of subjective, but the loss of a position versus the loss of, let's say, 20 years of your life for handing a vial of some substance to someone who asked you for it and wants it consensually. So it seemed to me in those days there was that power differential. I guess it comes down to the same thing, because we're representing the underdog, see,
right,
still today,
that's
in civil rights.
That's why you do what you do.
Exactly. So we've
it's
answered
giving
that question.
Voice to
it's not really
right.
It's not hypocritical, and it's not sort of a
it's
a
fighting against the man.
It's fighting against the man. The man. That's right. That's what I've been doing for almost 30 years now. Fighting the man on behalf of the disempowered. Well, what we think, and today we wanted to give some practical advice, and the call-in number here is 888-874-4888. That's area code 888-874-4888. We were talking before about just the common, what are the most common challenges that people face, whether those people happen to be women or men, in various situations on this planet. And it seems to me that there is this power differential. When it comes back to power, power is a big issue, it's, you know, seems to me. In fact, I just started watching, what is that show on Netflix with Kevin Spacey?
You may House know. House of Cards?
You know the show?
Oh, I've watched
show?
It,
oh, yeah,
the whole, both
so,
seasons.
So I just watched the first two shows, or the first three shows maybe of that season. You know, it's phenomenal. And Kevin Spacey explains that it's short-sighted. He never understood it, and he always tries to explain to people, and I forgot he was talking about, I think, the person who was nominated for Secretary of State above him or over him, that some people prefer money over power, and that money is like this, and he made the analogy of a very fancy house in Saratoga Springs that 60 years from now is a pile of molded wood, and that's money. And power is the, you know, the 3,000-year-old, you know, Roman, Greco, something that just is built to last. So it was real interesting. And again, that's how it seems to me the dynamic of our cultural economy, based on an oligarchy, a plutocracy. It's the mm-hmm. wealthy. It's the 0.1% that really run. The rest of us, you and I and our clients, don't have lobbyists in D.C. We can't afford that. You know, and so it does come down to, we really don't have, we all know by now, we don't have an equal voice. And it, and I've always been, as you know, a student of sort of that, the power when there's this kind of non-consensual power differential between people, or even between people and animals. You know, we've gone through that, and maybe we'll talk about that and have someone on the show one time, because that's been sort of a new. There was a piece in the Times last week about a group of lawyers who have been, again, bringing cases on behalf of mostly monkeys now that are domestic monkeys that are kept in captivity in people's homes. They're primates.
Right.
And how that we should have some sensitivity to that, that we think that we rule and can do that, and who gives us the authority to do that, and it's not the New Testament, is not the answer. But any times
it's not
sort of
getting, not to mention how they treat pigs and...
Exactly, well, factory farming is
abominable.
Well, you know,
factory farming and the tight cages.
Right.
And, you know, I saw this video somebody had done. They set up a small cage that said, stand in this. And the person would get in it, and they're unable to turn around. They can't bend down. They can't do anything. And the point was, and then he would show a picture, this is what's happening to this pig. This is how this pig lives.
Right. And it is.
And it's brutal.
Well, they are sentient creatures, and we don't seem to care, but they suffer immensely. And it's really all about the elimination of suffering.
Yeah.
And so in our suffering, I mean, we're talking about the thing that here we are in Women's Rights in the Workplace show, what could be practical to people who listen, and they probably aren't pigs or primates right now, or at least not monkey primates, sexual harassment.
In general,
but in our area is a sort of workplace sexual harassment.
Well, why we were talking about it is it seems to be very much in, I mean, what is sexual harassment? It really is a form of power.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
not necessarily exactly. about the sex, it's about the power. So whether it's people on the street in the whole holla back movement of standing up to street harassment, or in the office, sexual harassment, again, which is a power kind of position, and all of the conversation about really rape, and not that rape and sexual harassment are the same things, but it is, because rape is about power, and college campuses, and there's been a lot about it. It just seemed like this might be a good topic, and also because the last couple of weeks there seemed to be a lot more number of sexual harassment intakes this week.
You're talking about in our firm specifically.
In our firm specifically. So maybe a guide to sexual harassment, what to do, what not to do.
Right. Well, it is about power because, you know, we never get a call. We never get a call. And if someone out there knows of a situation that's like this, give us a call right now and we'll say, you're the one, you have disproved this, you've disproved my point. But here's the point. There is no sexual harassment when it goes from the less powerful to the more powerful. So you don't hear the guy in the mailroom hitting on the managing director of the bank and saying, hey, hubba hubba baby, would you like to go out with me? Because if he did, and maybe he does occasionally, but she will fire his dumb ass immediately, right?
Exactly.
She's going to say, excuse me, baking powder, what did you say? He's going to say, I just thought you were, whoa, 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 but I think you're really hot. Would you like to go out with me? And she's going to say, no, I'd like to fucking fire you now, is what she's going to say. And so it's always about men who have that, first of all, built-in power, like you're mine, right? So you, and even if it's not as explicit, I pay you. We know what that the next word should be. It's like, I pay you, and so therefore, where are my benefits beside that? You don't have to be nice to me?
Right.
You have to be nice to me. Now, what does being nice to me mean? Well, it's supposed to mean that you perform the essential functions of your position, and you do them well. That's how you're nice to me, the boss. And when I say, tell you to do something, I don't even have to, by the way, in all of employee situations, anyone who's listening who has a job or knows someone who has a job, they don't have to ask you nicely. They don't have to say, pretty please. Your boss doesn't have to be the person who says, you know, could you please do me a favor? I really would like you to make a copy of that report. I'd like it on my desk by tomorrow morning. It would be helpful. He doesn't have to say that. He could say, I want it by tomorrow morning. You know, have it be there, be square, or you're toast.
Mm-hmm.
There are no rules against that type of, you know, the pulling of rank, okay, in and of itself. We live in that type of, you know, the food chain, the hierarchy, which is often like paramilitary, our corporations. But what an employer, a boss, is not allowed to do, and this certainly is part of our culture because way more men are in positions overseeing women than the reverse, is when a man, because of who he is as a man, says to a female or subjects her to that energy. And I sometimes call it energy because it's not necessarily sleep with me, come to a hotel room with me, have dinner with me, touch your leg. It's not necessarily explicit sexual abuse or molestation. It can simply be, I want to play with you. So you see, when I'm here in work, I want to play, I want to flirt with you. Oh, you look really pretty today, Deb. That's a really nice, done anything different with your hair? Now, I'm already now flirting with, I'm not necessarily flirting with Deborah, but I'm flirting with a violation of the statute when I'm saying, because I don't even know how she takes that now. And there's a point, I could say to her on a Monday morning, you really, really look fabulous. Looks like you had a great restful weekend. Do something different with your hair? And she might say, no, nothing. And I'd say, you just look great. Now, I could say that. And perhaps the way I'm saying it, Deborah would say, oh, great, he's complimenting me. I don't have to sort of neuter myself, right? We don't have to work in a situation where I perhaps can't say to a female subordinate that she looks nice or healthy or attractive even, or it's a beautiful dress that she's wearing. But it does cross the line when I am flirting, when I am playing in the sexual realm, and that's fairly easy to tell.
Well, that's where the energy part of it comes in.
Right. Well,
because it's the context, it's the tone, it's right. The looking.
Right, exactly.
It's not just the words,
right.
It's everything that
right.
creates that energy.
Right.
That it's like when you walk into a room, you know right away whether it's a friendly room
right.
or a hostile
that's
room.
Right. That's
this,
right.
Is this a friendly comment?
Right.
Which is what a number of women will say, not to get off your track, but they'll say, it took a while before I really figured out because, I thought he was just trying to be nice. Yeah. I was trying to hear it as he was just complimenting
right.
me.
Right.
But
exactly.
then he crossed a line.
Right.
And in retrospect, I now see what I didn't see then because
exactly.
I was thinking he was just being nice.
Exactly. He was just trying to be avuncular. He's an avuncular guy. He's like my Uncle Joe. He comes on all the time, all hail, well met, friendly, whatever the expression is,
yeah.
folks. And he's a back-slapping kind of guy. Or, in a case that we had recently, and it is sometimes difficult to tell, when this particular man, who was the boss of this particular younger woman, kept making sort of a fetish out of food, her food, whether she was eating food. But initially, it was like he would say, you got to put some weight on there. You got to put some weight on. You need to beef up, and let me see your stomach, and let me see your stomach. And, you've been gaining some weight. Now, it was clear, certainly at the beginning, it's hard to tell. It was never overt. There was no
right.
there was no put together, I'd like to, sit in a bathtub of whipped cream with you and lick it off of you. Nothing about it was overt. It went on for months that way. But it was clear after a while, creepy was how she originally described it, but that he had a thing for her body. Her gaining weight, he had a little thing about putting some meat on this younger woman's bones. But he wouldn't have been doing it to me.
Right.
He did it to a young female. It was clear. And there are many different situations where you may find yourself, particularly when, and this I can't imagine young women these days. I don't know that too many women are immune. I don't know how you can go through being from starting probably in early adolescence to whenever men decide that women are no longer, sexual, if that ever is
your age,
okay. But well into the middle of the years and well past the childbearing years. But up until that, it's sort of fair game. You're a chick. Basically,
yeah.
Guys will sort of talk to you with that, root chakra thing. It just comes from that place. And again, there's nothing, we are human beings, there's nothing wrong with it. What's wrong with it is when you're abusing your power.
Exactly.
So when you're abusing, under any situation, whether it was Bill Clinton, by the way, abusing his power with Monica Lewinsky, and you know what? It doesn't really matter. And it doesn't matter. Here's a perfect case, and I wasn't a Bill Clinton impeach him person, but here's a point. When she went down on Bill Clinton in the Oval Office, it was definitely, it was voluntary in the sense if you had asked Monica Lewinsky, she would have said, game on, bonus, I'm blowing the president, right? I mean, she would have said, I'm assuming, I don't know the situation. I don't think she felt that I better get down on my knees and fellate the most powerful man in the free world, or I'll lose my internship. I think for her, it probably was a little bit more of, you know, he's Bill Clinton. He's a powerful guy,
man in the free world.
Right. So it was a little bit sexy, and she, you know, and she's only human too. But
right.
definitionally,
exactly.
And that's the problem I also have. And I spoke publicly on this a few years ago when it was an issue, when David Letterman. So here's a great case of what is or what isn't sexual harassment.
Yeah.
David Letterman was, if you remember, trolling for like love interests in the workplace. You know, he was in his 60s at the time, still early 60s. Wealthy beyond belief. He earned $35 million a year, he earned at the show. And he was, you know, coming on to women 35 years his junior. These staffers making $35,000 a year, not $35 million a year. To a last person, they all said he was a gentleman. He took no for an answer. He took no for an answer. And he was self-deprecating, and he laughed at himself, and he didn't mind. And when he went out with them, he'd go out with them like anyone else would do. He would wine and dine them. If it turned into something romantic or sexual, great. And when and if it ever ended, apparently, he'd say, you know, great, I'm a lucky guy to be sleeping with these random, you know, 30-year-olds and so forth. If you remember, it only became an issue because one of the women's jilted boyfriends, who was jilted not because of Letterman, but just jilted because he was a schmuck, apparently, then he decided to extort David Letterman. He demanded $1 million or he was going to go public with this, that he sexually harassed my girlfriend, who wasn't complaining. And so, of course, they wrote him out a check for $1 million and came with, you know, security and police and the photographers and, you know, sorry, you're going to prison now for 10 years with a phony check to this holdup artist. But the point was that David Letterman was never accused of sexual harassment by any of the women still to this day because there was no case of it. But the argument can be made, and I would make it, and probably you might make it, I'm not sure, is that it still was sexual harassment by definition, because if you're a 28-year-old staffer at NBC working for David Letterman, it's exciting as heck, and you're from Ohio and whatever, and he suddenly turns his attention to you and his charms, and you get into his crosshairs, and he asks you out, and you have a big situation. You know, again, you're probably not pining to shtup him. You're probably not. But you might think to yourself, this could be really good for my career. I like to sleep with David Letterman just to tell my grandkids one day.
Mm-hmm.
And you might not. Either way, the decision, you shouldn't have to make that decision because you work for him. He still pays your checks. That's why. And if you say no to him, you're saying to him, Letterman, you know, shove that up your ass. I don't want to sleep with you. You don't pay me enough to sleep with you for $35,000 a year. I don't want to sleep with some old man, even if that old man is David Letterman, right? So, you know, back to like a normal workplace. Now, again,
The distinction, I hear what you're saying, but the distinction with David Letterman seems to be that when the woman said no, he said, I enjoyed dinner, thanks, we're out of here. He understood there was a line. So if a woman said yes, then there is an element of maybe some of that was consensual. It didn't, you know, did it impact her job, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, but
it's the sexual harassment part of it, though, comes when the women, the men don't understand the no.
That is true, and it's technically true, and it comes back to damages and all the things that we always talk about. But when you think about it, it's not really the be all and end all of that, because we do have cases where the women are hit upon by whomever in the workplace, someone high up. In the workplace, it seems utterly inappropriate. They're, you know, many decades also younger, etc.
Yeah.
And also, it wasn't a consensual chemical, you know, thing. It's some older guy hitting on this younger woman. She says no, and he says, let's say, okay, let's just say he says no, or maybe he says no. There's a little bit of persistence for a while. She complains still. Says, I really didn't, you know, want to be, I don't want to have to work for a boss who's hit on me.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the company says, well, he's sorry, but we're not going to, so what now? Go back to work.
Right.
Except
that's
that,
true.
And now.
So then it becomes how she experiences it.
But also, yes, how she experiences and what they do actually do.
Because I do see how people who work together could possibly end up in relationships.
Of course, but it's not. But first of all, usually it's more. Just like there was in these three shows I watched it within a day.
House of
Cards, where one of the congressmen, the bald guy who they're setting up because he's like the drug dealing, drug using, whoring, there is sleeping with his staffer, and she says, "I think I'd rather us be a real item, not just an office item. I'll feel better about it. I got a job offer." And he's like, "Don't go." But the whole thing just seems so sort of murky and icky and a little bit compromised. If your romantic love interest is the guy who's paying you and you're not sure which end is up, because it's, again, they're ill-defined lines of what your relationship is, right?
That's true.
So the problem is of sort of shitting where you eat, if you will, and that's part of the problem why most workplaces, they say now, sure, you can fall in love with and marry someone you work with, but the farther apart I think that the power differential is, the more trouble there potentially will be.
Right.
So when the dentist is suddenly having an affair with his, you know, hygienist or something, and he's married, he's having it's bound to become a problem later on, unless he was planning on leaving his wife and marrying her and making her his wife and the new office manager. But there's typically a problem with it, because what happens when, if he is spurned, even when he's able to take it like a big boy, but he's still looking at her like, she sees him staring at her one day like, you probably said no to the wrong guy, this big swinging dick in this workplace. It's dangerous. And it's women who are in the position of saying, I have to sleep with you, asshole, in order to stay here?
Right.
That is where it should really be. You know what, guys? You've got enough places.
Exactly.
And you know what? When we flirt, when you say in the workplace, you've known this because I know you've had this in previous workplaces with people you've respected who you... have flirted with or whatever. They're mostly your equals. That's what it was mostly. Where you worked before, you could have that kind of thing going on. You have a few beers with somebody, and there's that thing. You're both married. You're in your 30s or whatever. But number one, probably no one's going to act on it. Number two, you could tell each other, go fuck yourselves, each other, when someone says something wrong. So when there's that collegiality, I've said that back in the day when Clarence Thomas, in the beginning, this is sort of the beginning of sexual harassment in our culture, when Clarence Thomas was nominated to the Supreme Court of the United States and Anita Hill came forward and said, he sexually harassed me. This guy is a predator. He is a slut. He's talking about porn every day and whose pubic hair is it. I mean, he was a disgusting guy. Excuse me. What was my point? I forgot my point. I'm going to go into Clarence Thomas again. I lost my train of thought on this.
I was trying to think of Long Dong Silver.
Long Dong Silver was his favorite video. Everyone should watch it tonight. It's rentable. Long Dong Silver. It is justice. Clarence Thomas's favorite, one of those, the top judges in the
community. Okay, well, let's not get distracted by that.
Yeah, let's not.
Okay, so we were talking about sexual harassment. So let's just keep going.
Okay, well, anyway, for practical advice, if you're in a situation at work and you feel that you're being treated differently because you're a woman. The same thing, of course, this is gender neutral. If you feel this way as a man, I know what I was saying before. At the time, I was working as a public defender, and we were still kids. My colleagues and I, and even the women, the pubic hair. Is that your pubic hair? Is that your pubic hair in my diet, in my mojito, whatever? And we were just like, you would say, go screw yourself or whatever. We were equals. We were just staff
equals,
attorneys,
right.
And we were equals. So it was like, I'll tell you what I think of that. It's another thing where you have to laugh and can't say anything on fear of being fired, and you're a single mother and you have bills to pay, and now you're a chattel. Now you're working and you basically every day have to look a certain way, even if he never would just have to look a certain way for my boss who's objectifying me. I use that word a lot, but what is it? I think it's important. Objectification, that you're, for some certain purposes, you're an object here. If you're a sex object, maybe men do this all the time and we all live with it. If you keep it to yourself, that's great. But to the extent that you're an executive assistant is someone who every day you sexualize and you can't really keep it to yourself. Sexualize her, objectify her. So in addition to being your executive assistant, she's also an accumulation of sexual body parts and things you think about it. And you make it clear to her that that's how you feel. That is illegal. I think it should be illegal. And the only way we're going to change that is to push back on it. We also have to empower women. And the more women there were in positions of power, the less there would be more women to say to the guys who are hitting on them, you're fired, asshole. Or, didn't I say no to you yesterday?
Right.
So if
so, yes. So what you were just starting to say is, so what can a woman do? Well, so when they're in that situation.
Okay, so number one, you're believing, in, you feel in work that your boss is treating you differently because you're a girl, okay? How's that? That's a way, you know, it doesn't have to be that he's asked you out on a date or said, can you join me tonight at the Q Motor Inn, the waterbed special for 3 hours. It can simply be that you're feeling that you're being some sexualized.
Spoken to in a way that he would not be speaking to a man that
way. Right,
or
a 65-year-old woman or a 45-year-old woman, perhaps. Well, maybe you. But he wouldn't be speaking to a younger woman. He wouldn't be speaking to a man that way. Absolutely not. And you know what? That's not such a subtle thing. It's a fairly bright blind test.
Yeah.
You could see it. You know, it's is this person, you know, attracted to me? And is it coming out in a way? Again, he should be attracted to me because I'm a terrific employee who works 65 hours a week for this guy.
Right.
For this company. And I perform. The rest of it is, again, I don't care how gorgeous they think I am. That's great. Let him go home and take it out on his love interest or do whatever he does. I don't care. Don't show me, don't tell me, don't allude to it. It's illegal.
Don't compromise my career.
Don't compromise my career. That's a good one. How about that? Because that takes it to a level. We're only talking about one of the most, except for our health, perhaps the most important thing to most of us, my career, my ability, in this, especially in this country right now, to be able to be independent and pay our bills and not be indigent before we die at some point.
Or to have that job that's, you know, a stepping stone that you want to try and work your way up.
But those are the women in those jobs. If you're a woman in your 20s right now, just to pick a random group of women from 20 to 30, and you're starting in your career and you're being paid more or less of an entry-level salary, but you want to go somewhere, you're on your way, and you can be, as a case we have right now, a professional woman. You might be an architect, a lawyer, a doctor, an accountant. You're still a young woman working for men who earn many, many times more what they think you're worth right now. But you're doing it because it's your career. It's important. That's what we all do. We pay our dues. But then you find yourself in that situation where, you know, but I don't really think that all of a sudden my body and how I use it or don't use it or how it looks or doesn't look or your opinion of how it looks or doesn't look or what you'd like to do with it is relevant to my job description. And that comes up really a lot because that's probably the name of our game.
So I think we're clear about sexual harassment, what it is.
Okay,
so
what do
now,
do?
What does a woman do?
Well, what I always...
Step one
is, first of all, make it clear. I always say, you have to make a decision up front. If the decision is you're not going to play and party and go further with your boss and you don't want to encourage that, well, this person, doesn't have to be your boss, but this colleague, this person you work with is... And it could even be someone who you don't work with, but who you have access to in your workplace, who sees you all the time, maybe a vendor. This is important to know. But someone, because you have to see them during your job, during your 40-hour week, is making you uncomfortable. If you can do it in a way without making a federal case out of this, literally and figuratively, right? If you can just do it by saying, you know what, Joe, you're a handsome devil. I have to give you that, but... you know what? You're barking up the wrong tree with me, brother. I don't know what the things that people say. If you're able to do that and feel comfortable with it, saying, you know, no, read my lips, like no, or I have some. I'm married. You're married. It's not happening. And I always say, give the perpetrator, so-called, the benefit of the doubt. You should be saying to this person, you know what? We work together. Can't we just, let's not ruin a good thing. I don't really, but I'm, you know, this, I don't mean to. And in fact, you're giving him then like a bite at the apple. You're not judging it. You're saying, you know what? I get it, but come on. No. If there are men like David Letterman who would say, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm whatever. I'm a schmuck, but I'm sorry. And it won't happen again. And it may not happen again. And you'll go happily along. I'd say more often than not, it's already a problem, though. And after you say to this person, you know what, no, you have to be very awake, alert, adept, conscious of what the reaction is. If the reaction is this shit's not working and he's not taking it well and it's starting to sort of snowball downhill, even if it's very subtle and very incremental, you have to complain. There isn't any go quietly, or you could talk to your girlfriend, you could talk to your parents, you could talk to your shrink, or whomever you want, you could talk to us, you could talk to a lawyer, but probably a lawyer who knows what he or she is doing is going to say to you this: if you can't you should nip this in the bud. And the way that you nip it in the bud, if you can't simply say, no, not happening, is to complain in a formal way. A formal way is because you don't want to have a water cooler.
But if I complain, I'll get fired.
Well, you see, first of all, that may not be true. And why Deborah just said that is because everybody says that and everybody worries about that. And that's a terrific worry. If you complain, you'll be fired. So first of all, that's not true. That's not necessarily true. Because the law says if you complain and you're fired, it's illegal. You have a better case. You have the case. That's the case, in fact. You've complained of a civil rights violation, and it could be anything. I'm complaining that I'm a person of color. My boss is a racist. I keep hearing him talk about all this shit. You and Obama, your people, crap. He's just a freaking racist. I can't believe it. And it's like Jim Crow South in New York in 2014. Or sexual harassment, or religious discrimination, or name the type of discrimination based on anything that's protected. Your responsibility is to complain, is to bring it up the food chain, is to say to the employer's human resource department, or anyone who has any power at all, it could be the perpetrator if it has to be him because he's the CEO. But if there's anybody else, you know, that's in the, you know, in some position of authority, you need to, so they know that the law says that once you complain of discrimination in any kind, they must investigate and they must launch corrective action, which is a fancy way of saying obviously they need to fix this situation. If they deem that we've spoken to you, we've spoken to Bill, we've spoken to Jessica, we've talked to everyone, you know what? Yeah, there was some, you know, there was definitely some inappropriate, they always downplay it a little bit, euphemize, some inappropriate conduct.
He feels really bad.
He feels really bad. He's apologized 7 ways to Sunday. He'll apologize to you if you want. But you won't be working with Bill anymore. He's on notice. We fired him, or he's in another place, or some way they resolve it. Not to your detriment. I mean, not where they've resolved it, but now they've sent you to Siberia to work somewhere, you know, is punishment. If they actually resolve it, which sometimes they do because they have lawyers too, and their lawyers and their human resource directors say to them, you can't really, the law says, when someone complains of a civil rights violation, we have to investigate it and fix it. And what we can't do is make it worse for the complainer. Anywhere near on the heels of that complaint, if we make it worse for her, we're screwed. That's called retaliation, which is the legal term for backlash, for, you know, the consequential result of complaining gets you fired. You've got a more significant case because it seems pretty obvious. Unless they come up with a really good, independent, non-discriminatory, non-retaliatory reason to terminate you after you complain, what the heck are they going to say 2 days later? Unless you started a fire in the cafeteria, came to work drunk, or, you know, cursed out your boss, they're going to come up with something. Well, your sales were down today, but I just complained of sexual harassment a week ago. That's way more important. That's a federally protected, that's United States law, and chances are it's in New York State as well, and your city protects against that type of retaliation. It's not, you know, this is not like vehicle and traffic law stuff. This plays out in federal court. There's nothing bigger. That's where the judge is appointed by the President of the United States and sits for life. There is no fancier court.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a, you know, and there are punitive damages and attorney's fees. These are big deal cases. So before it gets to be a big deal case, they know that you need to complain. That's how you take care of yourself. So could you get fired? Yes, you could get fired. Here's what you ask yourself, though. If I don't complain, if the answer is, and you examine your options, well, yeah, I might get fired. Now, if your boss has just, here's one analogy, I think, or one example. If your boss has said to you, Deborah, you probably know this. I was just wondering if you would consider having a drink with me one night. And you say, oh, that's really, let me think about it, but I didn't really want to sort of go in that direction. And he says, okay, well, you just, you know, think about it. At that point, and let's just say nothing else happens, or he's been otherwise, things are going okay after that, do you complain to human resources your boss is harassing you? If you're saying, well, if I lose this job, I'm a single mother with 3 kids, I'm going to hang myself? No, you probably would want to give them more time. That wasn't probably serious enough. You wouldn't want to raise the ante, go to DEFCON 2 that quickly.
Right.
You would want to try. But if it becomes the point where you say to yourself, like talking like the mother to the child within, saying, I'm not living like this.
Right.
I don't want to have to. I'm not doing it anymore. Even if it means I lose my jobs, fuck them. My mother didn't raise, you know, this kind of. I'm not going to be. If I wanted to shtup every asshole, I'd make more money doing it as a.
Yeah. Well, what I also say, and this is like on the non-legal side, is when women will say, if I complain, I'll get fired, it's fear that is preventing them from standing up for themselves.
Right.
And whenever we allow fear to inform our decisions,
right,
it never works out. So
right,
the circumstance that they're in is unsustainable. In one way or another, either you're going to sleep with them or you're not, but you can feel it's on that track that you could possibly be fired for rejecting this guy.
Right.
So you can't go in every day, am I going to be fired today? What's going to happen today? What is he going to say to me? How nasty or, you know, retaliatory or whatever. So it's not sustainable to begin with.
Right.
So by the time they're calling us, they're reaching out for help. So it's overcoming that fear in that they can't sustain this. This job is going to end. Either they're going to quit or they're going to get fired. So better that they complain, they stand up for themselves, they reclaim some of the power. Because when you have to listen to somebody treat you like that, when you have to be hit with that kind of energy, it
well, why not go along to get along in this corporate environment? If it's not that bad, if you don't have to, you don't have to have sex with him every day in the bathroom.
Well, and for many women, or for a good number of women, that's what they do. But eventually, they get a boyfriend. They're in another relationship. It becomes very
right,
wearing,
because
right, you can only tolerate that for just so long, because
right,
it becomes, you know, contemptuous, really.
Right. Right.
But the only reason you don't go forward is fear.
Right.
And in fact, by actually stepping forward, you're stepping into your power.
Right.
And putting power, you know, pushing power back against him. But more, you're standing up for yourself. Because with all that power coming at you, you begin to feel smaller, worn down. You know, you absorb it, and you can't do that.
But one of the things, isn't it, that helps with when you're sort of talking women down and sort of helping empower that sense of don't be directed by that inner wave of fear, because no one's ever made, and I agree with you, a positive decision from a fear-based grip place. Still, what's more important, because they'll still say, yeah, all this talk, you're going to pay me if I get fired? You know, who's going to pay me? This is my job. People have put up with worse historically.
The point is, do you want to leave on your terms or theirs?
Right. Well, here's the leaving part, because your terms wouldn't be getting run out of town on a rail after they fire you because you didn't sleep with the boss and you complained. Here's the important part is that the complaining, when people say, I'm going to get fired, as Deborah said before, if you complain, I'll get fired. If I complain, I'll get fired. Not only will you probably not get fired because you don't know that your bosses know that it's illegal
right,
to fire you after you complain, keep in mind the complaint shouldn't be at the water cooler to your supervisor when you say, by the way, I had a great weekend. You know, let me tell you something. Jimmy today, he just told me I got a great ass. What should I do? That's not the way to complain about sex harassment, because it's too casual.
It's not the way to complain about anything.
Exactly. But the way to complain about anything, and it doesn't have to be, again, you know, say filing a complaint with the EEOC or in court, is to just do something formal, meaning usually a letter to human resources, and not overblowing
it. Put it in writing.
Put it in writing.
Right.
So that you have a paper trail that says to the company, you know what, I feel that I'm being, you know, discriminated against. I'm being sexually harassed. I mean, my other, you know, you don't have to overdo it. I love working here. My job, I've been a terrific employee. I work late every night. It's just that, you know, Bill has been hitting on me, and I really need some support with this. I need some help. Please advise at your earliest convenience. That letter usually makes them all go, oi. It's the oi letter that makes them say, we're not going to, she's the last person who's going to get fired. Now, we know that. Employment lawyers
right,
know that. It doesn't mean that she's going to be 34 years longer with this company.
Right.
Because that, again, who are you complaining against? How powerful is he compared to what they, you know, it's this whole balance. But here's the bottom line. the company's either going to fix it, they're either going to listen to you and say, we're on this. And sometimes they are, for only their own self-interest.
Right.
They say, we're all over this. You didn't know, young lady, that he had been hitting on people for years. We're firing his dumb ass now. And then you've just won the battles and the war, and you took care of yourself to boot.
Right.
If you find after they fire him that they start targeting you because they didn't want to have to fire him because of you, and that does happen, that, you know, they blame the victim. Well, then you have a record. You've complained. You're still going to try to, you know, you'll do everything you can to remain gainfully employed there. But you know what? If you can't work it out then, or if they do start showing you that they really weren't happy that you brought this to their attention, and Deborah, you said leave on your own terms or leave on their terms. The leaving on your own terms, you're talking about, you know, having the leverage because you've filed a complaint. If the marriage can't be saved, and I'm talking about this relationship as an employee-employer, that marriage can't be saved, you might be able to leave with a severance package on your terms where you've said, you know what, I've told you, Joe is a predator. I don't like the fact if he was your daughter, Mr. CEO, who was here, you'd be all over this guy and you would have fired him a long time ago. But it's not your daughter. It's just me. And Joe's more important to you. Well, you know what? I don't like how he treats me. I don't like the response from this company. I'm upset now. Whether you're hiring a lawyer or not, what you don't realize is yet, it gives you power. Again, I'm not looking to have people call us to get cases over this now. This is not about that. This is about what do you do, and what does your daughter do, and what does your sister do, and your mother do when they're in this position. So it's sort of it's a kind of a delicate balance, and it's subtle.
It is.
But it's not running, going, you know, it's not running away and throwing yourself off, you know, throwing out the baby with the bathwater is, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Women have done this right for millennia, I guess, where all of a sudden this great job became dirt because my boss all of a sudden wants to sleep with me and I can't get rid of this guy. Or people have situations like the case we had last year with the law firm where, you know, big shot lawyer law firm was sexually abusing his assistant. You know, this stuff still happens every day. Disempowered. She was a single mother. She had, three children. She was commuting from New Jersey, going to work, and he had, you know, realized over time that she slowly was willing to sort of to play with him, to accommodate his other non-business-like needs. And you know what? Over time, and a lot of people do, you know, she's like, what am I supposed to do? He's, you know, it's a great job. I can't replace this job right now. So if it means he's going to touch my private parts and have me touch his for little breaks, she did that for a certain amount of time. And when she finally said, I'm not doing that anymore, she stood up for herself. She did get some proof that he was doing that, and it gave her all kinds of leverage. Everybody can understand that, of how she was able to leave, as you said, on her terms with, you know, a chunk of change, having taught that guy a lesson, clearly. I mean, he was sort of publicly outed. His partners, everyone sees him now as the predator that he was. And, you know, she gets to move on to another job and feeling like she really stood up for herself. Isn't that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what we always, how do you stand up for yourself, speak truth to power, and being able to walk away and say, you know what, it's not perfect. I taught them a lesson. I got a certain amount of money, and now I will move on. There isn't a silver bullet.
So what a person does is they are experiencing it. They write a letter, formal notification.
Right.
And then what?
Also, if your state, so easy to Google, if your state is you Google whether you're in a one-party or two-party consent jurisdiction for tape recording purposes. New York and New Jersey, for example, are one-party consent jurisdictions. Connecticut is a two-party consent. So the one-party consent, like New York, where we live and work, is if I'm talking to Deborah and in my office or in our conference room or anywhere, or even on the phone, as long as we're both in New York, and she tape records me, that's legal to do even if she's not telling me that she's tape recording me. So for one thing that you can do is if your boss is hitting on you, you may want to say to him in a meeting that you tape record, you know what, I think that I really didn't like it so much yesterday when you told me that, you know, my cleavage was looking really great in this particular outfit. It just bothered me. And you're also just being yourself, and actually maybe you'll get a human response, which can't hurt. But the fact that you have him on the tape saying, well, I'm sorry, I couldn't help. I said, you are so beautiful. They were so beautiful. Number one, smoking gun proof. Or you're complaining that way to HR, and you just you're tape recording your complaint. It's another way of doing it, like a letter that you send by FedEx or email, where you could prove they received it. Sometimes more powerful, though, because you could hear in a tape you're saying no, he's saying hubba hubba baby, or you're complaining, you're crying to the HR person. And what am I supposed to do? I mean, I'm so compromised here. I mean, I feel so degraded. And they're saying, well, we'll look into it. And the next thing you know, you're fired, or they move you down into the basement. You have proof. So, as Deborah was saying, the first thing is, after you haven't, if you cannot use your own personal interpersonal skills and finesse to get this person sort of off your back and to treat you with respect and do it with humor, do it with integrity, lightness. He is, after all, this is your job. It's important. You can't just say, you know, blah, 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 I'll see you in court, pal. You need to sort of do it intelligently and delicately. If that doesn't work, complain. Complain in writing to HR. Complain in writing to the highest person in the food chain. Try to send it, Deb.
And most important, don't
quit. Don't quit. Don't quit. Don't quit. We're writing a song right now. The lyrics are to the song "Don't Quit." We just need someone now to write the music. Just about "Don't Quit," because when you quit your job, and people do this every day. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. They get fed up. They quit. They say, "I'm out of here. I quit. Screw you. I'm out." And then they say, "Let's call a lawyer." I think we need to call a lawyer now. It's intuitive. You could say that way, but you're done. You're a dollar short and a day late then. And the horse is out of the barn and you're closing the barn door. It's crazy. So what you need to do is not quit, because when you quit, no case. No quit, no case. You've abandoned your position without good cause is one way that it's looked at. But again, you threw out the baby with the bathwater. How is the company supposed to fix this? There are times, if you could prove you've done everything you can to complain about it and it just keeps getting worse and it's so unbelievable that you had to run screaming out into the night, that, you know, a court would consider that a so-called constructive discharge. It's like they fired you. They intended you to quit. But it takes a whole lot to get to that point. So, as Deborah said, don't ever quit. You have to let them do their thing. And if their thing is, their investigatory thing, and their response and the remedial action that they take to your complaint of sexual harassment is insufficient, or it hurts you, right, or you're the one that they punish, or blah, 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 or they drag their feet, or whatever, any of those responses, then, first of all, you will document that, too. You want to maybe write another letter back to HR, right, saying, wait a minute, I just told you yesterday, I told you a month ago that Bill told me that my boobs look great in this outfit. Every day since, he's been staring at my butt and making comments and noises with his mouth. And I've been waiting a month to hear back from you. And now today I get a message that the investigation is completed, there's no action taken.
A lot of the response is, we don't see the same thing you do. But thanks for letting us know. We're going to put a note in everybody's file.
Right. But the thanks for letting us know, even when they do that, as we know, is a really good thing. They're minimizing it, but you formally complained, and their response
saying
thanks for letting us know is the issue was joined. They've agreed with you that you've made this civil rights complaint. That's the point. It's a civil rights complaint. They don't call it that, but it is. And so even if it's a month later, suddenly you're fired after you complained or demoted, you have a case then. That's the case.
Right.
The case is that you were treated differently, worse, fired, demoted, you know, transferred to the graveyard shift because you didn't put out for so-and-so. Or because you complained about him and they said, you know what, this chick doesn't know what time it is. She doesn't know who wears the pants here. It's almost a natural, it's still a natural reaction that sort of companies go through, because companies are, according to Citizens United, persons, and they take on that kind of, you know, that we don't like that one of our employees is kind of holding us accountable and telling us what to do. Like, who does she think she is? This guy's a rainmaker she's complaining about. He's a big wig. He is a big swinging dick in the workplace.
Right.
And who do you think? You've been here 4 months. You're 22 years old. So what? He's entitled to do whatever. Bob will be Bob, and you're going to have to let Bob be Bob. Well, you don't have to let Bob be Bob. Bob might not be Bob anymore after you finally, you know, but it doesn't happen that often, because either people are not, because we're in an awful economic time and an awful economic climate in this country, where if you don't have ample resources or you're not in a big city, it's hard to find counsel for this stuff. It's hard. And, you know, people don't know what to do. There's 10 people waiting for your job. We get all that. The question is, in that balance, number one, how much are you going to take, as, you know, as Jake LaMotta was told by his brother in Raging Bull, how much shit can you take, Jake? How much can you take? That's what you're going to figure out. And it gets balanced out by the complaint isn't an all-or-nothing thing. It might result in your success there. It might result in some justice. It might. It happens. Or at least you'll have that protection, that prophylaxis, that necessary first big legal step that will always result in, and what it comes down to, again, money. It's going to come down to, if you can't continue to work there, they're probably going to pay you some money in a settlement to have you leave and never work there again and not sue them. It doesn't matter whether you could win. It doesn't matter how far it got. It just matters, again, if the marriage can't be saved. What do you have in your corner? You have that you've complained. You've made a formal complaint. Not a formal complaint that my boss is a pain in the ass, that he's difficult, that he yells at me, that he's mean, that he only does it to me, but he yells at me, you know, and he or she just treats me shitty, and I don't know why. Well, if you don't know why, sorry, you have to know why. You're the one who has to fill in the blank and say, he doesn't like me because of my race, my color, my ethnicity, my sex. He doesn't like me, or he likes me because of my sex, but I'm uncomfortable. It could be the same sex harassment. Woman on woman, man on man is also just as illegal. So, the letting your employer attempt to resolve it is key. And if they do not resolve it, yeah, you should. If you're in an environment where you've done everything you can and you've written a letter and you've talked about the type of discrimination it is, not just that your boss is a jerk, and they then make it worse for you, well, call a lawyer, okay? So you can call. There's still a number of plaintiff's employment lawyers. We at Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock & Sipser in New York City, but we also handle cases outside of New York. Our number, by the way, is 212-766-9100, 212-766-9100. Our toll-free number, 1-866-FEMLAWS, F-E-M-L-A-W-S. And you can also, of course, look up the National Employment Lawyers Association. That is NELA, N-E-L-A, .org, San Francisco. They are an outstanding, just plaintiff side, just employee lawyer organization. They could tell you where the local affiliate is in your state or county and get a consultation. They're almost always free from an employment lawyer, a no-charge consultation, and empower yourself that way. Don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't quit. Don't not do anything because you think that's just the way the world is. That's the way men are, because that's the only way it's going to change. If we don't despair and give up and give in, right, as our bumper music says.
You know, and just to come full circle, because aren't we coming? Yeah. So, because it is about a power situation. So people can step up. And just like we became accustomed to walking down the street, and we all know the certain streets to avoid where people, you know, men are going to accost you just verbally on the street, and we, as women, tend to, you know, let it ride, ignore it. But as I say, it scars our soul. It's wearing. It just really wears you down. In the same way, to be able to step up and push back and take back that power.
Mm-hmm.
There is something incredibly liberating about that.
Well, it's also good to know that the laws have your back, right? Because, again, what you talk about from the emotional perspective side of this is, it's liberating to step up to free yourself or to be able to make a decision free of fear,
right,
and to stand up and fight for your right to be equal and all of that. But, and then again, that voice in my head says the same voice that you always hear, for real, but why, what about if I get fired? I'm still speaking truth to much greater power,
right?
And you,
but
Tuckner,
that's the fear you have to get over, that it ultimately will work out for your highest and best good, just on an emotional sort of level, but that it's an unsustainable situation that has to be resolved one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So why not take back and take some control.
Right. Well, again, but I think what's unsustainable is, and that's what I think makes it kind of easy and fluid, what's unsustainable in the first instance is our clients and would-be clients and really any working woman out there or any man who finds himself in this fairly unusual situation for a male, relatively speaking, that your gender and who you are as a sexual being and your who you are as a woman or a man is an important factor in how you're perceived in your job. And so from the moment that you decide, you know, I'm not, this is not how I roll, I can't, I won't, as what you're saying, you reach that, I won't, and I'm not, forget about thinking about money right now, I won't, I can't, I'm not, because my hair is going to fall out.
Right. Because it does begin to affect your health.
It does begin to affect your health. And your hair does fall out. Exactly.
Yeah.
Stress. That is the type of stress because it's so... It's almost like that animal in the cage in some ways. It's stressful. You can't get out of this position.
And you're trapped.
Right.
Because I need the job, but I can't stay here.
But by complaining and knowing that the laws, the federal law and your state law has your back.
Yes.
And if you do have to speak to someone, like when they call and speak to
and
you...
And not to just arbitrarily write a letter maybe themselves or to quit or to take matters into their own hand, call an attorney.
Right. Don't go postal, okay?
Yeah.
That won't be helpful, okay? You don't want to go... You don't
and that's
go
the other thing, too.
One minute.
Okay. Because women accumulate these feelings. So then they come plowing in with, you know, a year's worth of anger, resentment with, you know, withheld emotion. And it gets out of proportion.
And then they... shoot
go
six
postal.
People
at
right.
Yeah.
So you don't want to go postal, and as Deb said, you don't want to just go up half cocked and, you know, write, because again, we see people do that and they write this crazy letter, which does seem crazy.
And it should be short and sweet.
Right.
Not
they
three
write
pages.
Long letters to the you know, we had a client who wrote a letter to Ford, who's the founder of the Ford company?
Ford.
What's his first name?
I forget.
Well, whoever, I can't think of his name either, but William Ford or Henry Ford. Henry Ford III,
yeah.
Or the fourth, is still running or was running the company a few years ago. And she wrote a letter to him in Michigan. Like, and again, all they do is see that as you're nuts, clearly, right? I mean,
yeah.
She's writing a letter. She worked in a dealership.
One page
Totowa. One page or less, tight and right. This letter, and just say what you have to say, and let them meet with you, and that's your protection, and see what they do. Did we cover sexual harassment? As we have about, I think, 10, do we have 10 seconds left? Okay, we have 10 seconds left. Do we know who we're having next week, Deborah, on our program?
Off the top of my head, I can't
we
think.
Not. Okay. Well, we will have someone fascinating for you, or we will continue with our discussions of empowering ways for you to step up and fight for your right to be equal in the workplace as a woman, whether it's because of your pregnancy, the pay disparity that you suffer through, the fact that you are treated differently regularly as on the basis of your sex, that we have glass ceiling issues. We have, what was the latest glass ceiling?
Yahoo and Ford.
Well, it was the name of the term for the newest glass ceiling term that we were talking about. Well, neither one of us could think of it. It's we're having senior moments together. Anyway,
we'll talk
about it next week. Jack Tuckner and Deborah Orell, Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock, and Sipser, the women's rights in the workplace advocates. Until then, have a strong and powerful week.
Chance will come.